let's talk about tipping point states and why they're so important in presidential elections. A tipping point state is mathematically indispensable to winning a presidential election. Wisconsin was one in 2016 and in 2020, and analysts expect that it will be once again in the upcoming election. We want to hear from you on this. You can call 800-642-1234. What do you want to know about tipping point states and the way that votes are counted? As a voter in a battleground state, do you feel like your vote is more important? Call 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. Our guest is Craig Gilbert. Craig is the Lubar Fellow at Marquette University Law School and recently retired Washington Bureau Chief and National Political Reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He's covered every presidential campaign since 1988. Craig, welcome back to Central Time.
It's great to be with you.
A tipping point state is not the same thing as a battleground state, right?
Well, it's you know, in all likelihood, a battleground state, but it's not necessarily the closest state in a given election. I mean, the way I would explain this is, if you look at how Wisconsin voted in these last two presidential elections, and you took all the states to the right of Wisconsin, they would not add up to an electoral majority of 270 electoral votes. And if you took all the states to the left of Wisconsin, they would not add up to an electoral majority of 270 votes. So both parties in a really close election absolutely needed Wisconsin to get an electoral majority. That's the tipping point state. It literally mathematically puts you over the top in the Electoral College.
What about the level of importance? I mean, tipping point states are obviously crucial. Are they inherently more important than battleground states?
Yeah, I think it's really... Again, it's less a measure of the closest state than it is a measure of a state's strategic importance. It's really saying that if you have an election that's so close that it's decided by a single state, it turns out that's the state you needed under those circumstances. So it's probably the best. It's not the only battleground state, because there are going to be other states, you know, that have results that are very close, for example, to Wisconsin in these last two elections. But the way things worked out in both of these elections, it was an indispensable state. So I think it's primarily a measure of a state's strategic importance when it comes to the Electoral College.
Help us understand the calculation of the tipping point state, because we have the Electoral College that actually elects a president, but the calculation involves looking at the popular vote.
No, it's really looking at, we're just talking about electoral votes now. So obviously every state, the electoral votes that state cast is decided by the popular vote in that state. But, you know, you have states that are very red and states that are very blue. And those electoral votes obviously go to the candidate that wins those states. But you also have a bunch of states in the middle. And so, in this case, the tipping point state is really kind of like the median state in the Electoral College. And it does mean in a close election, it's in all likelihood going to be very narrowly decided. Wisconsin was decided by less than a point in 2016 and in 2020. And of course, going back to 2000 and 2004 as well. And in those elections, it was not the tipping point state, but it was very close to being the tipping point state in 2004, in 1992, and it was also the tipping point state in 1976. So that tells you that Wisconsin's strategic importance in presidential elections spans, you know, a half a century.
How is it that we are keeping this position when it comes to electing presidents? What is different about Wisconsin?
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting question, because there's no one simple answer. I mean, if you pose that question about what makes a state a battleground state or what makes a state a purple state, you know, you think about it as a process of elimination. I mean, you've got a lot of states that are very red because of the regional political culture. I'm talking about the South and the Mountain West. You've got a lot of states that are very blue, again, for similar reasons. If you look at New England and you look at the West Coast, and then you have other states that all those states are off the table. They're not going to be battlegrounds. But what makes Wisconsin, I think, one of on a short list of states that currently is a battleground, I think, has to do with the mix of voters, the fact that you've got urban voters, rural voters, and suburban voters. One of the big kind of, variants in presidential voting is how white voters vote. And you have a tremendous disparity between how white voters in the Deep South vote, which is overwhelmingly Republican, and how white voters in a state like Vermont vote, which is overwhelmingly Democratic. And again, if you look at these Great Lakes states like Wisconsin, white voters tend to be more mixed in their voting, and it's a more competitive voting group. So that is part of the explanation. What's kind of more perplexing in some ways is how a state like Wisconsin has managed to remain so competitive over, different political eras when voting patterns and demographic voting patterns have changed a lot.
Craig Gilbert is a former national political reporter. Now he's a fellow at Marquette University Law School. We are talking about Wisconsin as a tipping point state in this pivotal role in presidential elections. And we want to hear from you. 800-642-1234. How do you think about Wisconsin's role in the national political spectrum when you hear about this? Is it surprising to you that it has been in this position for so long? Or maybe that's exactly what you've seen, that Wisconsin always winds up being a focus of attention in the over these decades. You can give us a call at 800-642-1234 or send us an email at ideas@wpr.org. We'll go ahead and go to Jeff in Superior now, who's giving us a call to talk about this. Hey, Jeff.
Well, hello. Good afternoon. I really appreciate the opportunity to express my opinion on this topic because Republican Party has chosen Milwaukee to be the venue for their convention next year, and I'm actually a member of the Douglas County GOP. But I don't think Wisconsin is the right venue for this type of presidential drama. With the indictments of Trump and all the conflict in the party, I think, in my opinion, that the GOP could have picked a better venue, and in fact, they may change the venue before the dates of the convention. The Democrats have chosen Chicago, and I think the Republicans would do better in Las Vegas or Arizona or somewhere where there's more enthusiasm and more, a majority of Republicans.
Thanks so much for that, Jeff. Craig, what do you think about Jeff's point when it comes to where these two major political parties are choosing to highlight their work and drum up support with their conventions?
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting question because parties have used, have used different criteria to select their convention host cities. Stereotypically, we think of they're going to pick, an absolute battleground. So, if you can imagine getting a little bit of a benefit from having a convention in a state that you really, really need, you see that pattern a lot. But you also see examples of, and in fact, the Democrats chose Wisconsin, for the convention 4 years ago that ended up happening in the pandemic. But we've also seen parties pick states for symbolic reasons, even states that they had no prayer of winning. I mean, the Republicans picked New York in 2004 because of the symbolism of New York post the 2001 attacks. Democrats picked LA in 2000. These are all conventions I covered when there was no way they were not going to win California. So there are logistical reasons, there are symbolic reasons, and then there is, if you think you're going to get even a fractional benefit out of having a convention in a given place, that's could be a reason, for picking a given state. I mean, the caller mentioned Las Vegas. That is another battleground state, as is Arizona. And the Democrats in this case picked what is not a battleground state. It's in a battleground region, Illinois, but obviously Illinois is a safe Democratic state.
We're talking with former political reporter and now fellow Craig Gilbert about Wisconsin's status as a tipping point state, a status that we have held on to for a long time. We're also talking about what it might look like in the 2024 presidential election and Wisconsin's place in this political cycle. We want to hear what you think by calling 800-642-1234. What do you think of Wisconsin's role in the Electoral College? Do you think it still makes sense? What do you want to say about our processes and our place in them? Call 800-642-1234, or you can also email us at ideas@wpr.org. This conversation continues ahead here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Keeley Boltina. We're talking about Wisconsin's unique role in the last two presidential elections and the likely role it will play in 2024. We are a tipping point state. Our guest is Craig Gilbert from Marquette University Law School, and we're taking calls at 800-642-1234. We've got Jillian in Superior on the line. Hi, Jillian.
Hi. I'm just wondering, you mentioned that the demographic for Wisconsin voters has changed pretty significantly over the last, I'm not sure how many years you mentioned. I'm just wondering if you could elaborate on that more and how that impacts upcoming presidential election.
Thank you so much for the call, Jillian.
Yeah, I think,
Craig, yeah.
Yeah, it's not so much that the demographics have changed, but the political demographics have changed, which in other words, the way different demographic groups vote has changed. And, you know, one huge example is rural voting patterns. And I think most people who follow politics understand that, you know, rural voters have become increasingly Republican in recent years. And Wisconsin was an example where Democrats were unusually competitive compared to other states with rural voters. Just as, you know, suburban voters have gotten less Republican and more Democratic. And Wisconsin was once a state where Republicans did unusually well, with particularly with suburban voters in southeastern Wisconsin on the periphery of Milwaukee. Both those things have changed. And so the political map within Wisconsin has changed. The sort of formula geographically to winning the state has changed. But these changes haven't fundamentally advantaged either party over the other party. In other words, Wisconsin has remained competitive despite all these changes. I would say one of the bigger demographic changes, which is relevant to the state's politics in the last 20 years, is the growth of Dane County and the growth of Madison, the growth of the city of Madison, and particularly the growth of the suburbs of Madison. Madison being as blue as it is, that has really been a boost to the Democratic Party, and it's helped the Democratic Party overcome what has been the shift in rural Wisconsin, particularly in northern and western Wisconsin, toward the Republican Party.
Craig, Lisa from Winter called, couldn't stay with us, but Lisa says she's thinking gerrymandering has caused Wisconsin to kind of appear purple, when in reality, Lisa thinks it's really blue. What's your assessment there?
Well, I mean, gerrymandering obviously doesn't affect statewide elections. It affects legislative elections and congressional elections. So, and it has certainly produced, you know, a Republican lock, a one-sided Republican lock on the state legislature. You know, but she also raises the question of whether Wisconsin overall is a blue state or a purple state. And, you know, over the long stretch of time where I've been covering politics, in which Wisconsin has basically fundamentally been a purple state, there have always been times when some people thought Wisconsin was on its way to becoming either a blue-leaning state or a red-leaning state. And it's always sort of come back to being a purple state. And I think, if you look at the last 7 or 8 years since Donald Trump came on the scene, I think Democrats are doing better in statewide elections than they had done in the previous period of time. And Republicans are struggling. But you have to be careful about kind of extrapolating that out to future elections, because I've learned to be very cautious about projecting Wisconsin's sort of future political direction. But again, I think it's hard to make the case that Wisconsin is a, quote, blue state when 4 out of the last 6 presidential elections have been decided by less than a percentage point, including the last two.
That is particularly interesting because, you know, you point to Wisconsin being a tipping point in 2016 and in 2020, and we elected very different presidents in those elections, and somehow Wisconsin stayed in that pivotal role.
Yeah, I mean, obviously we helped put Donald Trump over the top in 2016 and then helped put Joe Biden over the top in 2020. So we were one of a limited number of states that voted for both Trump and Biden. We're also one of a very short list of states that are electing U.S. senators from different parties. So by all of these markers, you know, I think you have to sort of land on purple as the color, the political color of Wisconsin right now.
How many states are really in a place where they could be a tipping point state? I mean, Wisconsin is here in the middle, but most states, right, are reliably Democratic or reliably Republican in the presidential election.
I think you would say at a minimum, probably of the 50 states, you know, 42 or 43 of them are kind of locked in. And again, I'm talking about in a theoretical close election, not a landslide election for one party or the other. But I think, you know, all but about 7 or 8 states are pretty much baked in. You could even argue that really, you know, there's only about 4 or 5 states that are truly in play. I mean, you've got Wisconsin, you've got, if you go again, use the 2020 election as a guide, you've got Wisconsin, Arizona, Georgia, and Pennsylvania. And so I think those would be on your list going into 2024. And then, you know, you could throw in the Nevada. You could throw in North Carolina. You could throw in Michigan, although that's become a little bit more comfortable for Democrats, maybe New Hampshire, and that's about it. But again, it's a short list. It's kind of shocking, I think, particularly to political observers outside the U.S. that we have these, you know, massively costly and consequential presidential elections, and you're really talking about a battle over a handful of states.
You're making me feel a lot of pressure here as a Wisconsinite, Craig, thinking that all of this rests with just a few states.
It really does. And, you know, we're probably going to be one of them. And when the states that are tipping the Electoral College one way or another are themselves decided by a few thousand votes or even 10,000 votes or 20,000 votes, which is, you know, which is nothing, then, you know, you're really talking about a pivotal state in a pivotal election. I think, you know, there is nothing, you know, predetermined about the way Wisconsin is going to vote in 2024.
Mm-hmm. We've got Karen in Cable who wants to join the conversation. Karen, what's on your mind?
Well, I'm thinking about how gerrymandered Wisconsin is, and that may not make a difference for a presidential race, but it certainly does for Senate races and congressional races. When even if you overwhelmingly have a majority who are voting Democrat, we still can't get a Democratic representative. And, you know, the same can be said in terms of the Electoral College out west. They have much more power with such small populations than they currently have a right to. We really need to consider popular vote versus electoral votes.
Karen, thank you for the call. Absolutely. Just pointing out that the Electoral College is not like the Senate. You don't get a set number based on the fact that you're a state. It is based on population. But when she speaks, Craig, it makes me think about the fact that we have a couple of callers now who seem to think that maybe Wisconsin appears purple because of the elected leaders we have in more local elections that are lots of Republicans and then sometimes going Democratic in other ways. Is that anything that we can try to quantify?
Yeah, again, I think the only way to really evaluate you know, the statewide partisan makeup of a state is to look at the biggest statewide elections. And we've talked about presidential races and how close they've been. We've talked about the fact that Wisconsin has alternately elected Democratic and Republican senators. It's one of you know, very few states. I think we're down to maybe five or six that have one Democrat and one Republican serving in the U.S. Senate. And if you look at governor's races, we had, you know, Scott Walker winning. Well, if you want to go back in time, we had Tommy Thompson winning four races for governor in a row. We had, again, a Republican. We had Democrat Jim Doyle winning the next two races for governor after that. We had Republican Scott Walker winning the next three races after that, if you include the recall election. And now we've had Democrat Tony Evers winning the two races after that. So again, I'm going to sort of stand by my assessment that we're about as purple as you can get as a state. I would add on the question of the Electoral College, the caller does have a point in the sense that because every state's electoral votes are based mostly on population, but also every state is added to electoral votes for their senators, that does give small states a little bit of an extra voice in the Electoral College. On the other hand, while there are a lot of Republican small states, there are also some Democratic small states. So I think right now there is a Republican advantage structurally in the Electoral College, but that has just emerged in the last two elections. And that doesn't necessarily mean that in the next two elections, there's going to be the same Republican built-in advantage in the Electoral College.
Yes or no, Craig, is Wisconsin a tipping point in 2024?
Oh, yes. Well, there's only going to be one tipping point state. So whether it's Wisconsin or Arizona or Georgia or Pennsylvania could be just a matter of a fraction of a vote. But it's absolutely going to be one of the short number of states that matters and that will be bombarded by both campaigns.
We got a shot. Craig, thank you so much for joining us. Craig Gilbert talking about Wisconsin's position as a tipping point. This is Central Time.